Welcome, everyone, to a Mocha Live podcast episode that goes a little long, but I promise it's worth it. You're about to listen to the record-breaking third appearance on Mocha Live by the performance artist and anonymous debonair, Una. And as with every other time we have had her on, we can't help but speak a lot about performance art, face-to-face interaction, and crypto art culture right out of the gate. But the thing I always appreciate about having Una on the show is that performance art in her hands is a vector that points to so many other things. We start today's conversation, for instance, talking about Una's latest multi-city performance called Look, Touch, Own, and open that up into a discussion about all the ways, right and wrong, artistic and otherwise, that the crypto art world interacts with itself in real life. This is a topic that's been on my mind a lot, which you would know if you read my column from this week, but it's also something I need the help of folks with longer histories and more IRL experience, like Coborn and Una, to unpack. This podcast gets pretty deep into everyone's unique experiences, the ways crypto art has emerged into the real world for each of us individually, how it's been done correctly, and how it's been done incorrectly. Honestly, I'm not sure we could have had this conversation, and we certainly couldn't have had it as well, if Una hadn't just spent the last many months meeting many people, people inside and outside of crypto art, meeting them face to face and very vulnerably. But she did, and the perspective gained from that performance is palpable all throughout the episode. We welcome Una back to the show for the third time, and we welcome you as well to another Mocha Live podcast. We hope you enjoy. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Mocha Live podcast. That's right. It's 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the dot. That's 2 weeks in a row, starting right on time, might I add. My name is Max Cohen. I'd like to welcome you to the Mocha Live podcast. We're happy to have you. We're also happy to have our illustrious co-host, as always, joining me from in front of a very strange AI-generated portrait of a very sultry-looking lady. That would be the founder of the Museum of Crypto Art, Mr. Coborn Bell. Coborn, how you doing?
I'm so good. I'm just amazing. Thank you.
Wow. Such glowing reviews of your own personage every week.
Yeah.
He's never happier than when he's here with us, folks.
That's so true.
I think it might be true.
It is.
And then joining us for the third time on the Mocha Live podcast, with five cities. I always overestimate the amount of cities. 5 cities worth of performance experience top of mind after culminating her Look, Touch, Own series of performances in Paris just a few weeks ago. We are joined by the illustrious performance artist, Una. Una, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I can't believe I've been on here 3 times. I must really like you two.
You're the record. You're our record guest.
Oh my God.
I think you're like the only guest who's been on twice too. So
no, Linda was twice as well.
Linda's been on twice. We've had a couple other people on twice. So anyways, you're getting out ahead of it, and we appreciate your continued commitment to the Mocha Live podcast. Gosh. All right. So let's just get this out of the way on the basis of today's topic. I do not want to fool anyone with my online persona. I am much more ebullient and social on the internet than I am in person. I'm a millennial. I spend almost all of my time online. And so I have social anxiety, like I'm sure most of us do. And Una, I knew you were going to come on the podcast. And of course, you have this breadth of experience with performance art, being in a physical space with physical people. I just released a column about a half hour ago about my experience at Christie's last Friday for a Tashin event. For Robert Alice's On NFTs book. And I am thinking a lot right now about crypto art in the real world, because I cannot escape the fact that the larger crypto art gets, the more kind of acceptance it has, the more there are mainstream incursions into crypto art, the more that we as individuals are going to be tasked with moving out into the real world and interacting in whatever kinds of spaces are laid out for us. So Una, you have a very different experience with that than I think I have had, being at as like the designer of these spaces, being at the center of these spaces, seeing lots of different people, especially those you don't know. So I think we should start with your experience with Look, Touch, Own, and then move outwards from there. So you've performed this in front of a massive amount of people, and I would also imagine a massive subset of crypto art folks. Mm-hmm. You know, encountering people from crypto art in person, like, have you learned anything else about our little art movement, especially compared to like the wider public when it comes to like, I know you've done like a ton of just research and data collection about how people interact with you in this performance.
Yeah, it's like, well, first of all, it's a good question because it's kind of making me consider like the way in which I think it would be super effective to measure any degree of like a wider society is to take a really small niche data set that somehow like crypto art, like blockchain does attract a lot of people from different avenues. So the first four times that I did this performance, it was private invitation. Of course, people showed up that I had no idea, either from the gallery or from the curator or a friend of a friend, but they mostly were aware of kind of what I was doing with Una, maybe not aware of any blockchain component. So that was already interesting, where the data set starts to get skewed towards like, maybe let's call them normies, non-crypto art people. And then at NFT Paris, I almost had the extreme opposite. So there was plenty of degens and then plenty of art people. So it was a really interesting kind of like mix between, yeah, people that care about art, that are there for art, that understand kind of what's happening in the crypto art movement, and then a whole bunch of like the degen kind of vibe, which the two sandwiched together. I have like the most perfect audio of one of the interactions from Paris. And my dome, which is where Look, Touch, Own took place, was right by the main stage. So I have this audio and it's my friend going, hey, are you all right? We have 51 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, all right, let's do this. And just simultaneously, like the music from the main stage starts to blast and like Beyonce, and it's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, let's go do this. Let's stand back up and get ready. And then this guy comes in, arms crossed. It's like, oh, that's pretty good. I have a girlfriend, so I can't touch you. Oh, I'm on camera. Yeah, all right. I'm done here. And as he leaves, you can hear the announcer on the main stage go, the last time I saw you all, it was Coachella. And that, as like a microcosm of an inner experience of what's happening inside the dome, what's happening outside, I feel like that 60 seconds as this is kind of what's everything in crypto art. You have like, I'm going to flatter myself and say that in that paradigm, I'm someone who's really here for the art. Then we have someone who's really here for the degen. And then we have maybe someone who's really here for the Coachellas of the NFT world, right? And that in a 60-second experience is, I think, mind-boggling. So I don't think that really answers your question in any way, but that's, I'm done.
We'll get back to it. For those of our listeners who may not be familiar with your Look, Touch, Own performance, could you describe it perhaps?
Yeah, God, this is what happens when you talk about something for so long. I've been talking about this thing all day and I've been looking at images of it all day. Look, Touch, Own is a, well, basically I used to have silicone implants in my breasts. I got them removed. Now I invite people one by one for 60 seconds to come in, touch my breasts, touch the implants, touch my scars, and basically have a 60-second experience with me. Now, during their 60-second experience, I am tracking every single data point. So I have a massive spreadsheet, which is painstaking for me to go through. I do not like Excel. And I am literally tracking the touch number. Did they have nail polish on? Did they have rings on? Where did they stand? Were they far away? Were they intimate? Were they too close? How long did they stay? Did they stay for the maximum duration? Did they ask me if they could leave? Because a few people do. And so I basically have this massive data set. I combine live footage and the data set to produce a series of artworks. So that's the first bit of Look, Touch, Own. There's a second bit, but let's not go there now.
Yeah,
I'd like to say I participated.
You both did.
Oh, you participated too, Mags?
Yeah, I'm a participant.
I'd like to talk about our experiences at some point.
My very next question was, Colborn, what was your experience with Una's Look, Touch, Own performance?
Because I don't know if I'm ready. Maybe you should talk first.
So
everything is all right here. Wait, let me just say everything is all right. You don't need to like it. It didn't need to make you feel comfortable.
It's no, no. I just want to make sure like people understand what you actually walk into, or at least. So I saw it at the private showing, private performance in New York. And you like get a very nice youngish looking intern gave me some very specific instructions. You have 60, I think it was like you have 60 seconds with the artist. You may look at her breast. You may touch her breast. You may look at the implants. You may touch the implants. You have 60 seconds, something along those lines, and go through this little curtain. And there you are, a person I know, a human being who I know and have met. And you're standing there topless, holding breast implants in your hands. And I just completely froze. I didn't know what to do. I looked at you for a second. I became powerfully uncomfortable. I think I tried to crack a joke to the camera person, which came out probably in just like a muffled guttural groan. I think I looked at you and apologized, and then I left. I think it was in and out in 20 seconds or so.
You know, I actually did look back at your footage from today. That's about accurate.
Yeah. I will say, in terms of moments of deep humiliation, I have pretty good memory.
I tried to keep it maybe a little bit more together than that, although, it is tricky because, like, consent is implied, but it's not, like, really – doesn't feel like it, maybe. Because you have like Una as the object. There was, I don't know how responsive you are to other people. There was some like maybe a little bit communication at the end, but it's really surreal. It's really surreal. And I think I was pretty like light and delicate. And I'm really curious to see the range. You know, the person that went in before me, I kid you not, in there screamed absolute bloody murder. Just for the, I don't know why they did it, but I don't know, you know? So I'm just so curious. It is very curious.
Can I just share on that? So one thing that really, when I started this performance, I had no idea that it would be so much about consent. I really didn't. And it wasn't until the second day. So the first day I did it to like women and non-binary audience only. And then the very next day I did it to men only. And all of the men stayed afterwards, and we had like a 45-minute discussion about consent. And that was when it really clocked me, like, wow, this piece is actually about consent. And it lands for like men in this consent territory, which I'm so happy to be exploring like very collaboratively. And I had one of the guys from the very first day, like, right, like this performance made me question the limitations of explicit consent, because everyone does sign an NDA filled with paperwork, right? So like, that was super cool to me. And then on the Paris and keep someone like yelling before you, it was a different energy in Paris because it was 2 days in a row. Normally I come in for one day, I do it, it's kind of done. In Paris, the first day people did it and then everyone was talking about it. Mm. Then people had time and it festered. So I had so many more people in Paris come inside the dome and take on a much more forward position of the performer. In whatever way they thought that was kind of appropriate or that they wanted to explore. So like I had people take their clothes off. I had people perform to the camera very strange actions. I had people touch me in very strange ways. Like it got like the second day of Paris, there's some real fucking garbage. There's some real transcendence. So to hold the two inside one little dome inside NFT Paris, inside Grand Palais it's a quagmire for the mind, but one that I'm happy that we're here for.
So I'm going to attempt to like take off and land a plane here, because I think that like, I want to draw on your experience with Look Touch Own throughout this conversation, but I think in a way there is a microcosm here for how I imagine a lot of people feel with a lot of kind of just art world events where you like going into this performance, especially my experience, right? I knew basically what this performance was going to look like going in. I pretty much knew the position I would find you in, the kind of limitations of the thing. And then still upon getting there, I was kind of just struck by the actual tenor and sensation of being in that room, being in that space with that energy, with that expectation, with that challenge. And then I kind of just like crumpled. So consider the same thing. I'm going to port that to my experience on Friday with this Tashin on NFTs event, right? I knew it was going to be something more along the lines of like a panel discussion lecture followed by a cocktail hour. I was like, Max, you're going to go out there. You're going to say hi to some people you don't know. You're going to like not just completely like crumble with social anxiety. And like, you can understand the outline of the thing, but then when you get into it, there's no real way to prepare yourself for like the vibe in the room, right? And what I keep thinking about is that the kinds of events that bring us together, whether it's performance art, whether it's celebrations, whatever it is, I think it's pretty vital that we minimize that reaction as much as possible, because I don't think it's just me. I want participation from lots of people, and I want comfort in the space with a lot of people. I wish I had more time in that little room with you so that I could think more about like what it was like to be there, so I could consider, so I could have more than 15 seconds of experience and then immediately afterwards be like, should I go in again and try and do that over? So my question is to you, Una, if you were going to set up this performance from scratch and you knew either that you were going to have art / crypto art people in one performance and then you were going to have the general public in another, what different considerations would you put more weight into to maximize the experience of those people from each kind of like origin?
Oh, so this is where Una's kind of annoying, right? Because Una's like, it's my performance. I'm doing it how I want for whoever. So it's not that I really so much take into in this performance, like seeing an audience member as different based on where they come from, right? In the actual rigor of the performance. Mm-hmm. So for that one, Una's kind of annoying, but I will validate the energy of creating an environment where you posit an idea and then the process in which everyone gathers is really around that idea is something in which I sometimes find crypto lacking in, right? So what you're analyzing right now is we posit this kind of decentralized approach, and then we end up having these wanky kind of events where everyone's drinking maybe a glass of champagne and pretending, yes, when did you get into town? Oh, lovely. Right? You're talking about that tension that we seem to replicate patterns that we despise online.
Colborne, like, you know, you've been to a lot of, over many years, a lot of different conferences, a lot of different, you know, kind of like art events. I believe you were at Beeple Studio in Charleston at some point the last couple of months. Like, what are there through lines of what you would call like successful IRL crypto art events throughout, just like whether it's an event, a party, some kind of meet and greet, some kind of performance, etc.? Like, is there a common through line?
Well, the common through line, I think, is the demystifying of the online persona and making it human.
Mm-hmm. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, of course. You know, everybody, we're millennials. You know, we've been taught to build our persona. Some of us, you know, have real life experience. Others don't. There's a whole shade of, you know, there's layers to the onions and uncovering of like intent and who these people are. And by and large, most people in the space are rather good natured, you know. They come with good means, good intentions, good desires, and beginning to like parse and further separate who is your tribe and what is trusted information and who are here for the right reasons and who is kind of like behind the scenes trying to manipulate in different ways or move different things for different reasons is that is a real drawn out process that, you know, you can't just like take for granted online.
Mm-hmm. Didn't we already do an episode on the cabals?
Did we? Probably. That is...
We mentioned them maybe in passing.
There are constant forces seen and unseen that have all sorts of different intentions, you know? It's no longer just like renegade groups of individuals, you know. There's higher structure to this. So we've moved out of like a bit of like tribal fiefdoms or chiefdoms onto this scene. So like the coming into Christie's, we're playing in different places, we're playing in different landscapes, larger scenes, more history, more, you know, tradition. And so, you know, the unbecoming of something new, you know, there is a a tempering and an acclimation and a necessary and inherent meeting in the middle.
It just feels very important to me right now for multiple reasons. One being, like, we need energy as much as possible, especially in crypto art, which has not seen, I think, nearly as much of, like, at least quite yet, like, a trickle down of all of the, like, mirth and meme coin, whatever, extravaganza bullshit that's happening in kind of a different connected sector of, like, the crypto world. And so it's still kind of hard to be an artist making art here. And I think that, I've especially heard you talk about this before, Colborne, like, when we get together in real life, it can have a really powerful energizing effect, right? You can recognize the inherent goodness of other people. You can be encouraged to share ideas. You can, like, get that spark back that's kind of sometimes hard to find online. One of the problems I see, Una, you're an expert on this, is that we have folks here who are anonymous, fully or otherwise, and there's not really a salve, that is, if you are an anonymous or semi-anonymous person in these IRL spaces, unless you're okay divulging identity. But in a setting where that may not feel safe because you don't know everyone that's around, you don't know their intentions, you don't know what kind of superstructures have set themselves and, like, a meta architecture around wherever you are, like, that seems like an unsolvable problem. Una, what do you think?
I don't know. I kind of just have a simple belief there are two types of problems in the world, mine and everyone else's, and mine, my own. And I do have a philosophy every time that I put on this mask, which is within my space and my physical space, I'm the most powerful being. No one's smarter than me. No one's more creative than me. No one's more elegant than me. No one's nastier than me. No one's naughtier than me. No one's more creative than me. And my boundary ends exactly here, giving others full potential to sit in their own power. And that makes it much easier to navigate through any kind of terrain in which one's intentions are, like, unclear. And believe me, we've all been in shiesty situations. And I feel like we're just starting to kind of melt maybe some of the ice of the bear off of our own hearts, right? It's been a bit of a rough one, and hopes of spring are here. So, you know, I love going to events, and I have to say that, like, they've been a bit of a graft for me. In the very beginning, I had to literally sneak into every single thing. I gate crashed everywhere. And I was here for, like, all of the bull run, yarrara. And then, of course, it was much easier to gate crash in the bear market. And I'm hoping and I'm optimistic that the same kind of luck that I was given, right? Like, let me just put you some luck for a second. Una was born NFT NYC November 1st, 2021. I bought a ticket online. I got scammed. Obviously, no shit. I got fucking rugged. I sent, like, X amount. So I was like, well, fuck it. I already have the ticket to New York. I don't have a ticket to the conference. I'm just going to walk in. So I just walked into the conference and I was like, I'm performing. And they just let me ride right in. And I talked to everyone, not knowing who was a player or who was not a player. So I gave every single person the same degree of attention. And as I'm leaving the conference that day, there's someone with a wonderful video installation outside that says that he does NFTs. And he literally has videos on top of cardboard boxes by a trash can. And I talked to him. 2 months later, he invites me to exhibit with, like, Trippy Labs at Art Basel Miami. Like, that is the strange degree of luck that, of course, I credit, you know, like, my mom always says, like, you make your own luck. So it's like, yeah, I had to be there, but, like, there were other people there that were also, like, on that. And I have to kind of, like, hope that that energy and that luck will keep transmitting through, because that's, like, life force that keeps us going, right? Like, that's what makes the magic. Of kind of this, weird. So,
well, I want to just, like, add to that, because for anybody that's new that might be watching, I'm sure there's all zero of you, but the people are, like, still on the floor, right? Your favorite artists are on the floor. The people that are building are on the floor. Like, if you go to one of these events, you can have access and you can have those conversations. And, like, we're all still there. So in the way that it feels like family to us, people are still also super receptive to, it's not like this thing has taken off to a point where, you know, like, the people who started it are retired and far away, as it might be for like Ethereum, or it might be for some of these other communities. Like, the crypto art folks are in the mix if you're at the conference, if you're at the parties. And it might, yeah, it might just feel like a little closer, more familial, like we know who our people are, but anybody you want access to is just like a question away.
It's a really interesting point. And Una, I find that story very inspiring in a sense, because I think that I get tripped up sometimes, A, of course, by social anxiety, but B, by like awareness of who is who in a room, of who maybe I should be introducing myself, very heavy quotations, like should be introducing myself to, right? Who it might be like interesting to have a conversation with. I take all these preconceived notions that are based on bullshit that I, you know, steal from like an internet social scheme. And then I like am helpless, but to impart them onto reality. And then that changes like the nature of the get together itself. And well, I mean, let's like break it down even more simply. Like, what is the goal of, let's take Una, your experience, right? What is the goal on a cultural level of a performance like Look Touch Own? Is it to start conversation? Is it to like kickstart thought? What goes into like the desire for actually putting on a performance like this and inviting so many people to participate?
Can I know where you're trying to land this question before I attempt to take off this plane?
No.
Because I could go so many different ways, and like the truest reaction to that question that I'm having is it's really reductive to say that there's going to be one goal of the performance, or that I expect what an audience would think or what they would say, right? It's much more like, especially with the first 300 touches, it's like, it's a query, it's an investigation. And I'm trying to see genuinely how we perceive power, consent, privacy, boundaries, beauty, all of these different things that I couldn't really label them into one. And I like the nuance that it has when you're not really trying to be so, I want someone to feel worried about the climate. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I just took a bunch of climate.
when you were like designing the performance, like did you change it so as to make it either, you know, more provocative, more inviting of dialogue? I mean, I know with some of these performances, like you end it with a talk in front of like a round table talk, like the one that I was at. Like these seem like choices specifically made to foster debate, discussion, thought.
Yeah, totally. In each performance, I've kind of iterated, right? So the first performance, I already explained, it was on like the first two back-to-back were on gender, but I also let like the women and non-binary audiences come in groups, and there was no duration on the time that they stayed. So I had people in there for like 10 minutes because they were just like talking to each other. And then I iterated it to kind of men only. And then in New York, I played with the lighting, and all of these things were kind of more my experiments before Paris. But I think that the end result of anything which wishes to contribute to an ecosystem, a culture, a contemporary art landscape, which is all the things I aim to contribute to, should be as simple and effective as a seed. Everyone can plant it in their own garden and it will make its own meaning, but I have given this one seed, and I'm very conscious always in my performances of what it's like, this the seed of what I'm actually trying to give. And I guess the seed of Look Touch Own could offer many things. But I guess I now have a recipe for how to kind of guide someone through the performance and have it be a healing or transformative experience, because I have data from 300 people and I have exactly what they did that gave them that type of experience.
But so that's perfect, right? That answer. And just, I'm glad you took the plane off in that direction, because like participation is at the core of this performance, not just in the sense of like getting to be in the room, but getting to actually partake in something, getting to create the meaning for yourself, instead of what I feel like is the bastion of a lot of these events, which is like either a panel discussion or a lecture or a presentation, something or other, made with, you know, 10 minutes of a Q&A afterwards. But you know, Colburn, I remember when you did, I saw you on a panel at Now House at NFT NYC last year. And I so desperately wanted to ask someone a question. I was sitting in the back. There was somebody sitting up front who kept raising their hand and kept asking just like the most banal market questions, like market-based questions about nothing. And it was killing me. I couldn't participate in the thing, desperate as I was. I couldn't be like, ooh, pick me, like I used to do when I was in fifth grade. But like this idea of getting people to participate in whatever facet of the movement we're celebrating or dissecting seems so vital to me. So like Colborne, should fostering that kind of like dialogue and participation, should that be the or a guidestone in the kinds of events, get-togethers, et cetera, that we have?
Well, I mean, look, at this stage of this thing, we're not growing. Right. And that's like, that is for sure our biggest problem. We're not attracting new audiences. We're not attracting new participants. There's no traditional art world. It's all the same people everywhere you go. And that's a problem. So we got to ask ourselves why. Why aren't we growing? Why aren't people up? You know, can we tolerate people asking, you know, the same banal market driven questions again and again? You know, do young students, emerging artists, do people understand this? Do they feel like their voice is heard, and do they still feel like they can participate? Or have we pushed them so far to the edge, and has the marketing been so heinous? And so your question was, you know, how long basically can we sit and suffer in continuing to do this? Is that right? And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much more I can take. You know, it's this idea of like wanting to go deeper, but like crypto art is also not crypto art anymore. NFTs are for perhaps digital art and beyond. How do we break through and how do we break out? Yeah.
I have an idea. Because it's literally kind of like, yeah, it's that same notion of going deeper, right? I think the first thing is to slightly acknowledge that maybe I'm about to go on like a philosophical leapfrog. Let's see if this works. Even the idea that crypto art really was the thing that brought us together, it's really the notion of independent thinking that attracted all of those people. And that's how we all ended up in crypto art together. We're more independent thinkers. So how can we galvanize in a way which celebrates more independent thinking? So as the ruins of whatever kind of, you know, auction house or non-auction house, beloved OG collector, buy, blah, blah, blah. As all of those ruins fade away, there's still this kind of framework of independent thinking, which independent thinkers are always attracted to other independent thinkers. So it's maybe more a conversation of how do we reorient the conversation, the live events that happen around them, the dialogue, to attract more independent thinking and allow everyone who's maybe stuck in the purgatory of, fuck, I really liked NFTs, but I'm fucking dying here. Maybe it offers them a way up. So I don't know exactly how we orient towards that, but I always do think that when you posit an idea over like even one manifestation of the idea, it's always more resilient.
Well, I will tell you, and I have a couple of ideas. They're generalized ideas, but I do have a couple. And it's kind of based on a principle that I developed in college when I would similarly experience lots of social anxiety at some kind of like party where I didn't know very many people. My friends were all off in very many corners. I needed there to be a game being played. Didn't matter what that game was. Could have been a card game, could have been beer pong. I needed something that I could stand around, pay attention to, and just be like tangentially involved in, right? Just like standing on my phone, couldn't do that. Couldn't just stand against a wall, literally watching people. I needed a thing, right? I needed to have I needed the wheels to be greased between me being unable to function in a social setting and something to do. I didn't need to be completely like in either world, completely like solitary. I didn't need to be completely participatory, but there needed to be a clear and demarcated bridge from one to those others or one to the other, around which I and others like me could congregate. And that, I think, is what I want to see more at some of these events, right? Now, like, I don't care if it's fucking icebreaker games. Get people talking to each other in a way that doesn't just, you don't just have a bunch of people congregating around a bar or sitting in a lecture hall, you know, waiting on their phones for people to speak and then kind of just left to go do their thing. I am certain that the more we get people just in dialogue with each other, in a way which doesn't feel forced and doesn't put that preponderance on like me choosing who I'm going to go speak to out of a large room of people, taking that choice away and just saying, here is your bridge to social like interaction. Here is your bridge to participation. Here is what we are doing today. I think like even just at that level, it's so, there can be so much success. You know, Colborn, I know last year at the church, you had kind of a get together for, I think it was like 80 or so people. When I believe you were there, I couldn't make it. Even something like that, right? Where you're welcoming people into a space, like sitting them down at a table, saying, here's the people next to you, talk to them. Like, that's so different, right? It's just so much more pregnant with possibility. Even just getting people face to face in a way which doesn't feel networky and ostentatious. Corbin, I'm curious, when you were putting that event together, like, can you speak about that process a little bit?
Well, the process of planning any sort of event for independent thinkers is really terrible. especially when you are a unorganized independent person yourself. By the grace of God, everything worked out perfectly. But we're trying to coordinate people to get on a bus to come 2 hours upstate. But yeah, the idea was like kidnap people, make them sit next to each other for 2 hours on a bus, and then come and sit down at a dinner for 3 hours. And then, you know, 50 of them we like put in a car and took them upstate for 2-3 days. And that is for sure where the magic happens. That's where people like return with memories with people that they care about. They say, oh my God, this person's so interesting. I'm going to continue. And that was, you know, the basis for like lifelong friendships. And that's it, you know, it's not this like run and gun New York City trying to hit every event, talk to people for 5 minutes because, you know, this is your one chance to meet them. You can only remember so many people. You can only work with so many people. So you might as well focus on like curate the people, curate the opportunities of you know, that tribe and allow those people to naturally go deeper. And a lot of good came from that. But we need to focus on these things. And it's a little more than one day, you know, the longer you can go, the better. But, you know, asyncing people on a global thing is, or getting them to sync is pretty crazy.
I can attest. I remember on my bus ride up, I sat next to Robness. And it was maybe the second time that we'd met in person, but the first was super in passing. And it was like, well, we're sat next to each other on a bus, so what do you got? And I still remember moments of that conversation so clearly, right? And we had like this beautiful chat about kind of like gratitude and really sensibly just like carrying yourself and matching that energy. And then sat across the table from a woman who is now like a dear friend of mine and has been for like some time, introduced to. Yeah, definitely the IRL opportunities are like so lovely. And then at the same time, I think it's important to balance those with, you know, like I'd always be keen for things which like, sorry, I'm the type of work freak that I do genuinely like going and being like, hey, what does everyone actually do? Like when I'm at a party, I'm not going to ask you, oh, so which blockchain do you work on? Oh, so what do you mint on? Oh, so tell me about your practice. Like, no, I'm going to make sure that we're having a good time. So like, I also am the type of person who like, there are so many artists and so many people in our industry that I only basically know of their practice what a random Twitter fucking algorithm tells me. And I would love the opportunity to say, you know what, for 25 minutes, I just want to listen to you talk to me about your practice. So, and that way those events can be kind of maybe more digital and they can encompass and invite more people from all around the world. And it doesn't put such a fiscal onus and it's much more oriented towards like the ideas as well. Like, I think that the healthy balance is going to be between the two. So I don't think that we can completely abandon the online because it's part of access. I'm done. Sorry.
No, I really wanted to get to this point because I'm curious, like just these two kinds of events that we've just spoken about, right? Colborn, this dinner at the church, Una, your performance, like both of these took very different tacks to the same place, which is fostering discussion, getting people in a room together where they kind of have to talk to each other and have something to talk about with each other that doesn't feel forced and fake. What is the limit at which that can be scaled upwards?
I mean, what is the limit of authenticity? You know, it doesn't scale very high. How many people can you realistically be friends with in this space?
Yeah, but again, don't we hear the flaw in that, that it's orienting towards like a pillar versus like a stratum of thinking? So like, it doesn't need to scale so long as other people can come in and build what they want on it. Like, it doesn't, I don't expect that like everyone needs to meet Una, but I expect that Una will find them because we're somehow both connected to the antennae of like independent thinking or curious about performance art or all of those things, right? And I think that like people can come in. Sorry, I didn't mean to hijack your answer, but like just want to highlight that like it's not necessarily about scaling. It's about just like opening more avenues or claiming it less even.
Something that the contemporary art world has done well with is that the art itself allows access to the experience of the artist or the artist themselves or the network of that. And we haven't figured that out yet, right? There is no greater utility to the art than the art itself, which is what everybody says. The art is the utility, but like in the real world, the art is a lot more than the utility. You know, the art is the access point. And we haven't really figured that out. You know, we figured out that the art is the access point into a market around an individual. But I think when you're beginning to speak about, you know, where does this take us? Ideally, it should put us in those rooms. It should put us at those dinners. It should put us next to those like-minded people that want that. We're just not at a place where we need to gate it like that. And I don't know if that's even what we want to build for, but that is kind of the us versus them split that I see.
Well, I'll add something on top of that. I think a lot about something Hidden Forces said to me in the podcast a few months ago, which was more or less that like crypto art is not an art movement. It's a much broader cultural movement itself. And I think about like why people get into crypto art. It is not because they saw one crypto artwork, one NFT mint on the blockchain and were like, oh, I'm about everything that this stands for. You know, that may be how you pay attention to the thing at first, but it's about kind of all of the things that are involved in this culture, these like touchstones that, you know, we can agree and disagree how much that they are actually upheld, but things like free expression thing or like radical expression, things like creativity, cutting edge technology, people come maybe because they see an artwork, but they stay for the culture. And so I think when it comes to like the utility, quote unquote, of the movement, right? Like we're in theory offering something that's much broader than just like access to an artist. It's access to like this movement itself and the culture at its core, this kind of like ideally punkish aesthetic, this very like highbrow but not pretentious kind of way of thinking. And I want to find a way if we can port that into these IRL events. Like, how can we push that kind of underpinning of crypto art society and culture into these events? And I think that it goes back to like discussion, participation, creativity, creation. Una, you looked like you had something to say before you like kind of gave me a nod, or maybe you were just nodding in appreciation.
Yeah, no. I was nodding in appreciation and I was like, Max, you have ideas. Tell us.
The big idea is that I think that we are all aligned from an individual and institutional level and that we want more people here. You know, artists need a larger audience, want a larger audience that they can show their art to and sell their art to, and also like gain cultural capital through that process. I want more people to read my articles and listen to my podcasts. All these platforms want more users. So like we need more people, right? We need to be fun and interesting in a way that the traditional art world, in all of the times that I have gone to art museums and gone to some of these talks, it has just failed to be, because it is very much about like these star systems. It's very academic. I don't think it works very well. I can only be in an art museum for like an hour and a half before I like need to take a nap. And that's not an experience that's exclusive to me.
Me too.
Yeah. It's not fun. It's intellectually stimulating perhaps, but it's not fun, right? The experience of us experiencing art in most settings is not fun. And I think what crypto art can do is challenge that paradigm. I think art can be participatory and it can be fun. And I think there needs to be a way, and I don't have the way yet, of convincing the kind of current bastions of money and influence, that it is in their best interest to start challenging the paradigm of what this movement looks like when it comes out into the real world. I think that, like, that's the way through here, because they're going to be able to get the most attention. They're going to be able to draw the most influence, more than like an 80-person dinner at the church, more than, you know, it's incredible to get, I don't know, Una, how many people you had see your performance in total. Maybe yeah. You have that too many, but like, I want more. I want more opportunities to get more people participating, even in some way, to just see what the vibe is that we're building here. So I guess my last question is, how do we convince these bastions of money and influence that it is in their best interest to put on events, IRL gatherings, etc., to support performance art like yours, Una, that is creative and participatory?
Yeah, see, Max, again, this is where I'm a crypto artist, so I've never liked to ask people for money. I don't do that. I don't obey by that. If you read The Rebel, I'm like, fine. I'm not going to have to ask any bastions of money. I'm going to go out and I'm going to find people that like respect it and do it myself. So that's where it gets hard for me when I frame the question from pretending even in my head to appeal to any of these kind of groups that you're speaking to. But when I think about the question from the energy of, okay, how do we make it more inviting to people who aren't crypto native? I want people to be able to access and understand my work without having to access and understand, I don't know, who Beeple was. Like, how do we bridge that gap? Still figuring it out. I think it mainly comes to positing ideas first. And, you know, like one thing that I've really realized and been like deeply experiencing in my own practice right now is like, we all know it, but it's so invalidating to have so many wonderful ideas associated to an artwork and have to reduce them to a tweet. And moreover, then when you finally do manage to reduce them to a fucking tweet, then you have to hope that it algorithmically is a liked tweet. So then people actually see it. So you're not just screaming into this void of Elon Musk's asshole. It's like horror. Like for me, there is a realm in which like, I'm seeking to find smaller, more intimate conversation spaces where it's open dialogue, where I can actually talk about my work in a way where it's like, not, hey, buy my work. This is for sale. It's on exhibition and the exhibition closes in 2 days and here's a glass of champagne and no one looks at the artwork because everyone's talking to one another. It's actually like, hey, it's going to go quite slow. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about its relationship to that. Let's talk about like the kind of conversation base that you're thinking. And I don't know how to do that. So when you figure it out, will you let me know?
Colburn, you know how to do it?
I'm just going to say in 3, 4, or 5 years, you're going to hate this space. It will be so far removed from anything you enjoy, which is the intimacy of these conversations and the ability for us to go to these places all together and be there. It's going to be a nightmare. And it'll be like
25 people on the podcast at a time.
It's going to be like CES Las Vegas. You know, I just think, you know, just always be careful what you wish for. And try to enjoy it, because nothing in life ever gets slower, right? Mm. It's only going to get faster, more chaotic, more crazy. You're going to hate everybody that comes around. And like, we got some dope people here now. And you know, I think we've shared a lot of love. And I think that is part of the reason why we got to where we were, because, you know, it's nice to be able to point at somebody and say, damn, this person is like undervalued. Look at this work. Like, we have time to sit here and appreciate this work. Mm-hmm. And we might have maybe had some of that time during the bull market, but not really. Cause you go back and you look, it was a lot of like very hollow, very vapid, very like image first stuff that got packaged and sold and processed and pushed down people's throats. So, you know, the mania doesn't get less, and the network effects of capital stay very strong. And the people that are here, you know, they're going to stick around because love it, hate it, whatever. This is just I won't swear, but this is just the place to be. Like, we're sitting on the cutting edge of the two technologies that are going to redefine completely the shape of capital and therefore the shape of the world. And it's cool. It's just, you know, we should be so lucky.
Can I ask a question on that meta? So by that presumption, when you say that like these networks, the networks of capital, I think you said the networks of capital are already like stabilized, or they continue to stabilize as time evolves. Do you think that you're going to see in whenever this kind of trickle down, if we presume that it's still working under like a trickle down economy type system, whenever the trickle that we're seeing right now eventually hits crypto art, do you think those networks are going to lightning rod their networks first?
I don't know. I don't particularly want to speculate there. You know, it's, you can look at the, we only have one analogy, and that is cryptocurrency, right? And what we have to assume we're doing is building a culture for, or a market for culture that it is as fluid as the cryptocurrency market is currently. Right. But instead of projects, you are going to have artists, and these artists are going to be in charge of the tokens that they've created, their supply. And that relates to some sort of total market cap. And, you know, there are investor participants that have some liquidity in each of these. But, you know, the top 10 projects in 2013 were not the top 10 projects in 2017. We're not the top 10. There's Bitcoin, and then there was Ethereum. And so, but that doesn't mean that those projects have necessarily disappeared. What was, you know, 1 billion for one of those projects then, or what might be like $1 million for an artist today? Well, you know, that could 10x, that can 100x very, very easily. But most of the time, it just like, it doesn't just disappear.
Wow. Now we're way over my head. I really think that's a beautiful thought. I will end just with this. I was talking to,
It was half baked. It was a half baked thought, but there's something there that we need to, that we should keep digging into.
Speaking too abstractly of it, it's like, we're talking about like a cloud as we're inside the cloud.
Yeah.
You know, it's either like you need to name the cloud that's like a cumulus nimbus cloud and it's operating in this way, and then we can work through the vapors, but it got a little vapor.
It's got a lot of vapor. I still think that all the narratives that were told during the bull run will be told in the exact same way this next cycle. There's going to be like historical NFTs, and there's going to be every single grift from here to infinity. But all of those, you know, like early AI, historic, you know, whatever, it doesn't really matter. And there will be the same meta narratives that are rolling through. But that's because there's truth and validity from a market standpoint. And that just grows the pie bigger and pulls more people in. And it's going to be like a blip on the radar. Digital art will continue to be like the art, and crypto will continue to be the currency, and, you know, AI will continue to be like the intelligence. So here we are, like mere mortals now stuck in the machine, rapidly approaching some sort of like economic and cultural singularity. And, you know, like you will be known by who you were, because in the future, you just won't, it won't be the same.
I agree. I'm only laughing. Maybe we could just end with this, but there was this old SNL skit of Jim Carrey making fun of a Lincoln ad or a Buick ad or something that Matthew McConaughey did. And there were these very like philosophical ads where Matthew McConaughey would just be like going off on something. And Jim Carrey's in this car and he just goes, "We're just flies on a rock in a void floating through space." I'm like, you're like, we're just mortals in this machine.
I mean, we kind of are, man. Like, we're just, you know, there's an algorithm that feeds you and you eat, and it might, you know, it might as well just be like the meat slop that they package into a chicken nugget.
And daddy's hungry.
Yeah, but you just like gotta keep eating, you know? You gotta
let's
Well, like, you guys, there's a case of nihilism over here.
No, but it's, you know, it's good and it's bad. All things change, but we have no control.
I mean, which is why we need each other.
Oh, I completely disagree. And Colburn and I always have this perspective. I do believe in free will.
Yeah, I believe in free will. That's personal control. But a lot of people gave their heart to try and craft some like safe meta narrative for the NFT space, and capital eats everything.
Mm.
You know, we just exist within structures that are so much bigger and more consuming than ourselves. And, you know, fighting that from a philosophical standpoint, sure, there's... Well,
yeah, but hold on. You can't fight it from an overarching philosophical perspective. It's too powerful. You are caught in the machine. That's why you need to completely shirk away the overarching side of things and get really, really nitty gritty. You need to just have like conversations with people about bullshit. You need to like be in some space, like making a drawing. You need to be like in a small white room looking at, exactly. Like you need to kind of get small when the thing is asking you to get big. And when the bigger it gets, the more depressed you get. You have to respond to that with like powerful reactivity. And that's why I think that's basically the genesis of this whole conversation. Is I think that these interactions that we have IRL are the antidote to way too powerful market dynamics, way too powerful cultural dynamics that are just stomping on us all the time. And the only way to get out of that is just turn away and just try and have a good time with people around you. But to do that, you need the space to be you need the physical space you're in to be cognizant of what we're trying to do with each other and what the space, larger space, is trying to do to us. So that's kind of the genesis of this whole idea. Let's cap it there before we get either too optimistic or too nihilistic. This is a really fun conversation. I know when a podcast goes over like 55 minutes, it means we were having a good time. Una, why don't you take a second and tell everyone listening what you have going on, what they should know about where you're at right now. Floor is yours if you'd like.
Oh, just have a good life, man. Have a good life.
Short, sweet, and to the point. If you'd like to have a good life and you'd like to start right now, you can give us a like, a follow, or a subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts for our Mocha Live podcast, which we care about very deeply. If you'd like your life to be even better on top of that, you can subscribe to our Substack at museumofcrypto.substack.com. I've already gotten 3 very kind emails and messages from people who really liked this week's column, so it could be yours too. You can see what all the fuss is about. Una is
in an hour and a half.
Yeah, I'm getting pretty good at this.
Yeah, everybody tell Max how much you love him because he does really good work.
I really need your validation. It's
important.
The air which I breathe. Yeah, you think because I'm not like an artist that I don't need like external validation, but in fact, I'm a writer, which means I need like 3 times as much as any other people. Anyways, this has been wonderful. Una, thank you so much for being here. Colborne, thank you as always to everyone listening, watching, etc. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back next week, another Mocha Live as always. So please take care of yourself and take care of each other. And we'll see y'all real soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
This podcast was edited and produced by me, Max Cohen. Thanks to Una for generously coming on Mocha Live for the 3rd time. Thanks to Colborne Bell for co-hosting alongside me, as always. Thanks to Julian Brangold for creating our intro music and to DayFox for our cold open theme. And finally, thanks to you for listening. We'll see you again soon on another Mocha Live podcast. So long.